Welcome to Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast's 200th episode, celebrating conversations between some of Syosset's most notable creatives. In this episode, we are joined by Kathy Kim and Jay Max, class of 1997. Inseparable from middle school on, Jay and Kathy saw in one another a spark that followed them through adulthood. After losing touch for almost 15 years after high school, the two were reunited in their careers in the entertainment industry. Jay and Kathy sit down with us today to discuss their friendship, dealing with self-doubt, and how they both found success. Kathy as Sesame Street's Ji Young, the first Korean-American Muppet, and Jay in the music industry, both children's and adults.
Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Kim, I am an alum of Syosset High School, class of 97, and I am currently a TV puppeteer, probably most recently known for Ji Young, the first Asian American Muppet on Sesame Street.
No, but now you just did.
And I am Jay Max. I'm also part of the same class as Kathy and our amazing host here, Jessica. And I'm a songwriter and an artist as well. And I do a lot in kids music. So I've done Nickelodeon, Universal Kids, Sesame Street, as well as do pop music across Asia and.
So let's talk a little bit about both of you. Like, how did you come together as friends in Syosset? And talk a little bit about how you both recognized that you were creatives.
Oh, that's a great question. I can't remember the first time we met, Jay. Do you?
I can't remember the moment that we met. I just remember us just always being together. Like, I just remember a million different moments, but I don't know that moment where I was just like, saw you across from the cafeteria and I'm like, I'm gonna talk to her.
It's very strange because like, I feel like with a lot of my close friends, I can pinpoint like a moment where we became best friends or it's like, oh, I met you through this person.
But it was middle school, right?
We must have known each other through middle school. We knew each other in middle school. Yeah, eighth grade, I would think.
Yeah.
Seventh or eighth grade. And our paths didn't cross because I don't know. We weren't in a lot of classes. We did music, but I did like wind ensemble and you were a choir boy. And
and barbershop quartet, which is so cool.
Yes. Do you remember, do they still do the thing where you pay money to have like four teenagers sing Sweet Adeline to you of the opposite sex?
Indeed they do.
It's amazing. You were one of those guys.
Yeah, I was. I did every part, depending on what phase of puberty I was in. I was able to do, I ended up at bass. I definitely started in the high soprano and I kind of did everything in between. So I could trace my like hormonal growth through what part I played in the barbershop quartet.
I love it. But yeah, you're right. There were like so many different moments that I can link back to you where it felt like we were just like soul connected and like we were definitely shared like this little secret world in our friendship where, you know, all the sort of like insecurities and anxieties that you're working at as a teenager, we like felt completely comfortable being just like vulnerable and weird together. And I'm sure that's how like other people feel about their best friends like in their teenage years, but that's definitely, do you remember like we had this like theory that like God had split up do you remember this year, Drew? I don't know if we came up with the story and then you wrote the comic or you wrote the comic and came up with the story all in one, but like we had like there was like this idea of soulmates that like two souls were destined to be together, but we felt like we were so close that God had like this big mamma jamma soul, oh, soul number 486 1,000, you're too big to fit into one person. Maybe I split you up. And then he splits the Isolde 1,486,402, whatever, into two more manageable sized souls. And then they're like, well, see you down there. Maybe. Yeah, maybe. But what are the chances a gay Jewish man and a Korean like kid of an immigrant are going to meet
each other? Find each other in this crazy world. Yeah. What's funny though is like I feel like now that I had totally forgotten about that comic and that whole like story, but now I'm remembering. I feel like that whole thing was the opening segment of Hedwig and the Angry Inch movie, and I'm like,
oh,
we came up with that way before the movie. So I'm like, this is how what creative geniuses we were. Like that was.
I mean, it's worth mentioning that as tight as we were in like high school, there was like a long stretch of time that you and I did not see each other. We kind of like went our separate ways. And it's very recently that we like, because I would try to search you sometimes and go, gosh, I wonder where Jay is. I hope he's doing well. And I would try to like search you and you were completely off the grid.
I was not an early adopter when it came to social media. Like I think it took me a while to get to the point where I was like, oh, I want to put, you know, my life out there and do all that. So I did. Yeah. I was really good at like not having a digital footprint.
I gave you props.
Like if I actually did want to disappear, like if I committed like some sort of like terrible, like fraud and I wanted to like hide, but probably not now because now things are too advanced. But back then, I would have been great at being able to go to some European country and hide out. And nobody would have ever found
me. Absolutely. Nobody would have ever known. But yeah, we had these like, it's funny because we bonded over being creative people who did not know how to be productive at all with that creativity.
What we were going to do. Like we were not one of those like people. Like, we were talking earlier that there's some people who just seem fully formed. Like I know for a fact that like Taylor Swift at age 5,
yeah,
writing the most beautiful song, right, that I probably couldn't even write now, but like she just knew who she was and knew everything. And I'm like, I didn't.
She went for it because she
went
like,
for it. And she just knew. I think also with you and I too. I think there's sometimes people who have just one thing that they just know that they want to do. Like there are those kids who are just theater kids, and we know some people. Like I know a girl who is she was a year or two younger than us, but she ended up on Broadway, and I always remember her as just being like a theater person, like everything, that was what she did. I feel like for me and maybe for you, we just like, I don't want this to be like, it's not like a humble brag thing, but it's like, we could just kind of do too many things and we liked too many things and we were so creative and we just like, well, how are we going to channel that? And I don't think it was clear at that time. Like I certainly didn't know I was going to end up going into doing the type of music that I'm doing. Or, I mean, you're a little bit more folk. I know you always loved puppetry. To an extent.
I did, but I also liked, you know, the idea of TV production and filmmaking.
Yeah.
And my parents didn't let me go out for drama club or theater. And so I, you know, even though I always felt like a shy but performative kid at the same time, like my parents like just wouldn't let me go out for theater stuff. And so like in my mind, I never thought of myself as a performer or an actor. And the puppet stuff was really fun, but then that's why we also translated that sometimes to like, we took an animation class a couple times in high school.
Sorry.
Yeah, because it kind of like all sort of overlaps a little bit. Like for me, I don't know. Like I think I was just like really scared. The puppet stuff, like we did the thing with Yarf. You want to tell a story?
I could remember. I don't remember every single thing about high school. Like I'm not one of those people. Like I feel like I probably blocked so many things out, but I remember like certain pivotal moments and I remember them really well. And I remember we were in the cafeteria and then we were sitting on like, and I think it was some sort of I don't know if it wasn't like a drill, but it was like something that we weren't eating. I don't feel like, I feel like we were there and there was like something that they were like an announcement or they were doing something. And it must've been cold because you had a scarf.
I don't even remember why I did it, but like I wrapped and it was like this blue and black patterned scarf, like turquoise. And like, I wrapped it around my hand and then took my glasses off and I put the nose of the glasses on my middle finger. And then my pointer and ring finger went over the top of my glasses just to hold it in place. And I kind of wrapped it around that there was like a bit of a mouth. And so then I was able to like make this like, you know, use my fingers to sort of like make eyebrows over the glasses. And he was very expressive. He was just, and so we just stupidly named him Yarf the Scarf, or whatever. Yeah, we're so creative, right? But like, you know, and so it just became this reoccurring character at the lunch table where Yarf the Scarf would come out, and he was always kind of like put off and cranky. He's like, huh, what? You know, because we could get all this like action out of the eyebrows.
He was like the Larry David of like scarves. He was like a little like, you know, a little ornery, but like really funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so like that, between that, and then also, do you remember the Martin Luther King Club Ugly Duckling puppet show we would do at elementary schools? You did that a couple times with us, Jay. Do you remember?
I think, yes. Yes,
we
yes.
We would go to elementary schools. I don't know if they still do this, but the Martin Luther King Club, which was like about like equality of all sorts, not just like racial, but you know, just otherwise. And we, a few times a year, yeah, we would like go out to the elementary schools, and it was great because you missed a day of school, public service. And we would do the Ugly Duckling play, a puppet show. And then we would talk about how like, you know, it's when you get to know somebody and who they really are, you know, blah, blah, blah. Don't judge a book by its cover. But the puppets themselves were shit. Like, they had been passed down through the years through other kids, yeah, you know, teenagers who had made. And what it basically came down to was like colored pencil drawings on like poster board, laminated. So they kind of a little stiff and they couldn't get too damaged, nailed onto, or like even staple gunned onto 2x4s. So like not even like little sticks, but like boards that you like construct shit with. excuse my language. But so 2x4s with like these giant laminated like pencil drawings that like teenagers did, and they weren't really good puppets, but I remember like when the duck finally emerges as like a swan, it was like the biggest poster board, and if you just wave that 2x4 just right, you could get a really beautiful like flapping of the wings, and I was really proud of myself. And so like there were moments for sure that I'm like, and I love Tenzin, I love Muppets, I love Sesame Street for way too long, you know.
We love Labyrinth. Remember, how much did we love Labyrinth? I feel like we watched that many times.
I loved Labyrinth.
You know, every line of that song, you know, you remind me of the babe.
What babe?
The babe with power. Yeah.
What power?
Power of
voodoo.
Voodoo.
So it was always there, but like truly it was like I'm like, I don't know what I'm gonna do. I want to do maybe like children's TV, like that's kind of like where I thought, you know,
I remember you saying you couldn't do that. Like I think I was more almost like encouraging, like you could do that, like you should do something creative, like you could totally do it. And I feel like you were like,
I still battle that voice, but I just, you know, like I think you give me too much credit. I don't know, you were like, you're like a beautiful like artist, like you could do these amazing pencil and pen drawings, you had this beautiful singing voice, you're an incredibly talented writer, and so you did have like a lot of stuff. For me, I feel like I was just scared. I think I was, and I still am, just scared to like just do it and put it out there and have someone look at it. Like I grew up playing piano, I grew up like drawing, and I hated having people listen to me play or look at anything I did. I was just like, you know, don't look at me.
It is scary. Like that's why, like even for me, like it's so much easier for me to write for other people, or for you know, me to like, you know, have my songs and shows and stuff. But for me to, I'm only kind of recently really kind of putting out stuff for myself as a singer, because yeah, it is hard, like when you're putting yourself out there. And that's like my area where I'm a little bit like insecure, you know, where it's like, you know, you're putting that out and you're going to be judged. And but then it's like sometimes you just have to do it, and it feels kind of so good to just have it out there. And then after a while, you realize like you're not doing it for other people. You're doing it.
Yeah, I think the older you get, the less you care about what other people think also. And so, but what's the story with this album that you came out with? Like what, cause I listened to the clip that you posted and you sound amazing on it. It's so great.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like I've kind of been working on some of these songs, and it was one of the, like, I think you know this about me, and I think you're kind of like this for sure too, but I'm definitely like a perfectionist to the point where I could talk myself out of like, oh, something's not ready. It's not the right time. I don't have everything exactly the way I want it. So I kind of just won't do it.
Yeah, and, same.
Yeah, and like, we're the same. So I feel like that was the thing. Like I've recorded some of these songs and it just never felt like the right time. Mm. And then it actually was kind of, it was weird because this was like a few months ago and I listened to a song, which I did a few years ago, and I hadn't listened to the song in a while. And I'm like, oh, this song is, you know, I like this one. This is really good. Like I should do something with this. And maybe, but then I probably would have just ended up talking myself out of it again. And then I got an email notification as soon as I finished listening to it. And it was an email from the place where I'd gotten that song mixed in Brooklyn. But the weird thing is it's not like I signed up for a mailing list. I've never gotten an email from this place in Brooklyn where I got the song mixed. So for it to come right after I listened to the song, like years later, I kind of just felt like that was like a sign from the universe. It was just something saying like, stop, like take notice, like you need to actually do something. So that's when I just decided, you know what, I'm going to put it out. And I've been putting out some singles and I'm going to be having an EP come out soon. And it's cool. It's definitely,
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's just a different side. You know, I think everything we do creatively, it just expresses a different side of us. So it's cool.
When you're putting something out that's like very personal, there's so much more at stake and like there's so much more sort of like fear attached to that. Like for me, the way that I got into Sesame Street was this workshop, this audition only workshop in 2014. I never would have submitted my tape, like never would have done it because it's the same thing. Like, it's like this procrastinating perfectionism where you're just like, you know, and then you know all the ways that it could go wrong. And you're like, well, then I'm not going to do it. If it's not perfect, like the first time, the first try, like I don't want to do it. But yeah, it's like the older you get, the more you just kind of take those chances. Cause you're like, I mean, like in my case in 2014, it was like Brian, my husband, pushing me. And then honestly, also, when I told Jessica this, is that like, I knew that everybody in the class that I had taken, the puppetry class I took, was going to audition also. And I'm like, I think I'm better a puppeteer than they are. And if any of them get in, I'm going to regret not sending in a tape. And it was like really the only reason that I did it. So last minute, I like crammed in something and that kind of like led me here.
Amazing. I feel like we reconnected before all this stuff was happening with Sesame Street, because I remember when we first reconnected, I think you were still doing the kind of the post-production work.
Well, I was still doing post-production up until like last year, because there's not a lot of consistent work in puppetry. On the subject of like fear and not going for things because you're just like, oh, it's not going to be perfect. Sometimes I'd be sort of down on myself for not going into puppetry like sooner. I didn't really start until like my mid-30s, which is a great lesson for everybody, you know, like thinking about that next move, like go for your dreams, you guys, it's never too late. But like, honestly, even if I had, I don't know, I feel like I learned just as much, like just being in the working world and working in the post-production side of like TV, you know, it would have been good to like start puppetry like in my 20s when like my body was younger. But also it's like, I don't know, you learn so much other like worthwhile stuff about like just how TV works and just how to be on set and just like being a person of the world instead of being kind of like, you know, funneled into this very niche community like early on. But the huge thing was that like in reality TV, there's no script that you like cut an episode to. It's just you just don't know what you're going to get footage wise. And there's a million different ways to cut it, which means however many people are going to look at it is however many times you're going to freaking cut it. And so in the beginning, when I was doing this sort of story producing stuff, I'd be so nervous because I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to try to arrange this footage in a way. It's not going to be perfect. But then you quickly learn that there is no perfect. Like everybody is like has a subjective opinion on stuff. You got to do what you think like you believe in and you think tells the best story and is the most entertaining. It's going to change a million times. And so not only that, but I was a freelancer. And depending on what show I was on, I'd have to suddenly be an expert on moonshining or true crime or physics or like how diesel engines work. And every show is run completely different. You have to learn a different editing system. And every single time I get like a new job, I'd be like, oh, I don't know how to do this. How am I going to do this? This is so hard. But then like you, that happens to you enough times that you realize like, oh, I know this panicky feeling. This will go away in a week. Like I just need to get through this first like growing pains week of like figuring this out and then I'll be okay. And honestly, like, cause for a kid, for a teenager who was just terrified of everything and being like wrong or imperfect or rejected, like that was the greatest muscle memory that I could build up of like, not like being like, okay, this is uncomfortable. This is like, I'm out of my league, but I'm gonna do this, you know? And that was such great training ground for me on Sesame because like I did not like go to school for theater. I didn't like lug around a puppet show and like, you know, hit the pavement doing kids shows, like, you know, birthday parties. I took a class for fun with my husband. Everybody auditioned for the Sesame workshop. They plucked me out and suddenly I was dropped in the middle of the cast of like some of the best puppeteers of this genre in the world. And just talk about imposter syndrome of like, what the hell am I doing here? You know? But I think it was that those years in like post-production that like primed me to be okay with failing, be okay with like people having different opinions on you. And honestly, it's probably not until this year where I've been sort of breaking out into like other characters, like on my own and not just like being like an observer, mentee, assistant, like at Sesame that I'm like, oh wait, okay. Maybe now I'm not the same puppeteer is like these other people have been doing it for decades, but I'm going to figure out what makes me special because like everybody brings something unique. And that's been like the sort of greatest lesson. And it took me freaking 40 years to figure it out, but better late than never.
It doesn't, I mean, the fact, I mean, if you think about that girl in high school that was like, oh, you know, no, I don't know if I could, I can't do this. And, you know, I'm just going to do some this stuff on the side to go from that. It doesn't matter how long it took that now you were just like named one of like the you know, 50 like women changing the world from like Worth magazine. Right.
And yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, that's insane. You know, I mean, something to be so proud of. And it just shows that there's no straight line to that. Actually, when you were talking about cutting the video, like, and kind of your like analogy to how, you know, as far as like perfectionism, but I actually also was thinking of like, it's like another life lesson there. It's like, there's no one right way to make the story. Like everyone's story is going to be different. Like I remember when I started getting some of my success in kids music and we would, you know, be in a situation where there was maybe some people who were starting out in music or even still, I have people sometimes reach out to me on LinkedIn and say, hey, it seems so cool what you're doing. Would you mind, you know, chatting with me on the phone? And I'd love to like hear about your story. And I always do. Like if someone is interested, I always like love to try to help them. Oh, but nice. The one thing that I always like stress is like, I can tell you what I did, but it doesn't matter for you because what happened to me was such a unique set of circumstances that like I never could have lined up in a million years. So you kind of just have to, the only defining thing is that you have to say yes. Mm. Like not in like the Jim Carrey, like say yes to every single thing ever, but like you have to say yes to a lot of things because it's like mm-hmm. every big opportunity I ever had, if there was an opportunity in every single one of those situations where I could have said no, and some of them I almost said no, like the night where I got my, basically the moment that gave me my Nickelodeon contract, I was like so close to not going to that event that night. Because I talk myself out of it. Oh, I don't have the right kind of music. Mm. Those producers aren't going to, you know, one of them is from a kids music station. I don't have any kids music. I was so close to talking myself out of it, but I said yes. And like, there's no path you could follow.
No.
But there's that, I feel like there's that one kind of unifying, you know, kind of like, you know, mantra that you could say is like, just say yes. Because the worst kind that could happen is nothing. But, you know, it's nothing is definitely going to happen if you don't put yourself
right. So. I mean, similarly, I would say that like for, because Yeah, in puppetry, it's the same thing. You hear everybody's stories of how they got to Sesame Street, and they're completely different. There is no people, you know, who are starting out. They're like, what do I do? What's the secret? And you can tell them, like, you know, how to practice and whatever, but it's you're going to find your own completely unique path. And kind of similar to your sort of philosophy on saying yes to stuff, for me, like, I've realized, like, you can't just practice one very specialized skill set in a vacuum. You know, there's never going to be this one perfect job that's going to, you know what I mean? Like your one very specific skill set is going to be, you know, fulfilled by, like, you need to learn how to do different things, you know, need to take on different jobs, or you learn how to work with different types of personalities. Like, you know, for me, working in post and editing, you know, on Sesame Street, we're one of the last shows, besides like News, that does a three camera studio setup where we're live cutting between the three cameras. And it's tricky. And like, sometimes, like, you know, we have to sort of like stop and pick up certain things in a different order. But I have that editor's brain where I'm like, oh, I understand how this is cutting in. I understand what the shot is or where we're coming from. Same with, like, I have producer writer, you know, experience. I have like being on a set experience, like all that stuff is like valuable. And so, you know, with anybody doing anything creative, it's not just about, well, I'm going to be a saxophone player, so I'm going to sit here and like only learn how to play saxophone as like best as I can. And that's great. But it's like, you also need to learn how to, like, you know, produce, how sound equipment works, like how to work with people, how to, you know, like the business end of things. And so, kind of similar to like saying yes, like, even if it's not the perfect job, like, figure it out and you're going to learn stuff that you know, might never have done on your own. But yeah, and I do remember when we first reconnected, because speaking of your experience in children's television, I had just done, it'd been a couple of years since I had done Sesame. And in the early years, I'd be brought on like a day or two or four, you know, per season. And that was it, you know. I think they were kind of trying out the new blood before they sort of figured out who they wanted to focus their, you know, sort of mentorship on. And the funny thing is that my first season, season 46, was your first season for Sesame Street. You know, as kids, like, we both enjoyed like stuff that was definitely for kids. And we both, like, you know, sort of honored our inner child. I think we both still do. And the fact that, like, we didn't talk for maybe, I mean, it had to be at least 15 years.
Yeah.
At least 15 years that I didn't know what, like, you know, we had not talked at all. To realizing we both had our first working day on Sesame Street.
On the same, like, season.
What the heck? Yeah.
And not only that, but even more was, you know, after we had started like talking and reconnecting, we realized that my producer from all the Dora stuff that I had worked on.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing person, Holly Gregory. Amazing, amazing, amazing person. And she was like, I think it was maybe even on Facebook where we just like both, like, I saw Holly comment on something from Kathy. And I'm like, well, next time I saw her, I'm like, you know, Kathy? She's like, oh yeah, I, you know, Kathy like worked with me, like she was a producer or she worked with me on something. And I was like, that it's so crazy that this person who was like a really like pivotal person in my life. And I think pivotal in your life in some ways, as far as like, you know, in the industry.
I was her PA. I was a PA at Nickelodeon.
It's so crazy. And that, like, another person like that, like, our paths, like, without, we weren't talking at that time, but like our paths still, like, our big giant
parallel.
Just is, like, you know, like, it can't be separated no matter what. Time and space can't keep us apart. In some way, we're like connected.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.